If you want Colts talk all year long, you're in the right place. This is the official Colts podcast, giving you an updated look at what's new with the Horseshoes.
Gets off to Taylor. He's in. Touchdown. INDY. Fires that way. Picked off. Darius Leonard at the 5-yard line. Plants in the pocket. The Colts bring it down. A sack for Indianapolis. Steps up into the end zone. He throws. Michael Pittman. Touchdown.
Let's get the podcast started.
Welcome to the Colts official podcast presented by our friends at WinBet. My name is Jeffrey Gorman. Joined by the voice of the Colts, Matt Taylor, Lara Overton, and J.J. Stankovitz. They'll be here in a minute, but I'm going one-on-one with the voice. And before we get into whatever's going on, and it is going to be a great show because, Matey, it's always better when you win. But, brother, I'm going to tell you this much. You called a hell of a game because I go back and listen to the call, especially the good drives, even though without touchdowns and whatnot. And this cat calls a hell of a game. And not only that, you led to the excitement everybody listening at home and all across social media as well. Good on you, brother. I don't give you enough props, but boy, oh boy, it was a great connection of a team coming back, playing well at home, having the crowd on their side, watching the best quarterback in the league have his difficulties, and Matey with the call. Well done.
I appreciate you, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing
You're
great.
You fired up today.
Yes, we got to ask.
What a difference 7 days
it
makes,
is
right?
It is a one win because
that's it. You win a football game against a marquee team. We're going to get into it. I know they didn't play their best, but good teams still find a way to win that game if you're the Colts. Take advantage of the Chiefs' mistakes. And here you are. You're right back into the thick of things in the AFC South. The Jaguars are playing some good football. You're going to play them in a couple weeks. But you're only one game back. You still got 14 games left. And, boy, 1-1-1 is way different than 0-2-1. There's no doubt about that. So, huge game coming up in week four. The AFC South comes calling again, and you're right back at it, my man.
Needed some breaks for that W, and I don't care. Sometimes you need luck on your side, and we got it. Plus, we got some stout defense at times. And, boy, oh, boy, some decisions. We were going, wow, let's go. I mean, late in the game. What are we doing? All of a sudden, a 15-yard sportsmanlike came into play and stuff. We'll go over that. We're going to take a look at
this. Some guys laying on top of the quarterback, whispering things he shouldn't. Right?
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, that thing was great. And good on Matt Ryan.
What up,
like
teaching
I said,
point?
We are going to get into that. Colts sit in second place in the AFC South. After 3 weeks behind those Jaguars, the win against the Chiefs, it was the first Colts victory in the month of September. Since 2020. Let's go, boys. The Colts will stay at home this Sunday as they welcome the Titans into town. They also notched their first win in the season in week three. Tennessee, they've won back-to-back AFC South titles. You know this. And they've won three straight games against the Colts. This is a biggie, riding the wave into a divisional foe, a divisional rival, I say. And like I said, again, at home. Matey, we're going to get to that, but the storylines that popped up after the Chiefs game, give it to me. Matt Ryan engineered the winning drive in the fourth quarter against the Chiefs. Huge 16-play. Props to the O-line on that 16-play drive as well. 76-yard fourth quarter drive. It consumed 8 minutes, 14 seconds. We saw what he did. He hit Jelani Woods in the end zone. 12-yard touchdown, 24 ticks remaining. It was the 43rd game-winning drive of Ryan's 15-year career. Tied for sixth most with the Cat from Green Bay. How much confidence can...
the Cat from the Green Bay
We know
Bay
who
Packers.
We're talking about. Favre right now. I'm not talking about anything else other than his football prowess. But how much confidence, Matey, can we take from this and build off that final possession? And again, props to the O-line, giving him some time to throw and making them when it counted.
It's a huge confidence booster for Matt Ryan, the offense, and the entire team because it happened in crunch time. It happened in the fourth quarter when the game was on the line. And so far this year, the Colts have been a good fourth quarter team, at least in two out of the first three games, whereas last year they weren't a great fourth quarter team, right? They kind of wilted in the fourth quarter and in overtimes of games last season. And that's why they call him Matty Ice, right? I mean, he gets it done in those moments. As you said, 43rd career game-winning drive. Eight different players touched the ball for the Colts on that last possession. They even face first and 20, I think, like at the Chiefs' 40-yard line because of a holding penalty and still overcame that and got the job done. So I think it sends a message to the entire team that we can win close games. We're a different team than we were last year with that ability to close out games, right? Just 2-5 in one-score games last year. So, yeah, as we said, obviously, you know, we kind of joked at the top here that the Chiefs certainly didn't play their best football. And it came down to the team that made the fewest mistakes. Mm-hmm. And the Colts were definitely the team that made the fewer mistakes on Sunday. That's why they won. And again, I know we kind of joked about it, but I think it is a huge teaching point. Use Chris Jones to your advantage. Use it as a teaching point, teaching lesson, even though it happened to your opponent going forward. You can't do dumb stuff that gets you beat. And they did a lot of dumb stuff that got them beat.
What did he say, Maytay? Come on, give me some options. Let me pick one. What do you think he said to Matt Ryan?
It might have been an S word or an F word.
Was it about his mama's cooking?
Something.
What was it about?
The pool reporter he asked the official there at the end of the game, and I think the response was vulgar language that you shouldn't use to your opponent.
Hi-oh.
Unsportsmanlike conduct.
So here's the bottom line. If it happens.
But no, I mean, think about it. You get a sack on third down with 5 minutes in the game. You're up four,
right.
You're going to make your opponent punt. I'm not saying the game's over, but you feel like you're in a really good spot with Patrick Mahomes taking over the ball and
killing
the clock with a couple first downs. And then all of a sudden, the Colts get the ball back, a first down penalty, automatic first down, I should say, 15-yard penalty. You get the ball at midfield. They go down the field, eat up 4.5 more minutes of time of possession. I'm not saying it was the biggest play of the game.
Absolutely,
like,
man.
Like the Jelani Woods touchdown, yes. You had the muff punt. All of those things went into it. But you just can't be Chris Jones going forward if you're the Colts. You have to use that as a teaching tool.
Shocker. Great player, too. Been in the league a while. Don't know what the heck he said, but if it's coming down in an NFL game and it's just about the verbiage being used,
right.
It was pretty salty then because there's a lot of filth and foul going out there between plays. So
and you know the
whatever
official,
he said.
You know the official at that point doesn't want to throw that flag because
at that
he
point
knows.
Of the game, yeah.
But it was warranted. Otherwise, he wouldn't have thrown in that situation.
Right. Defense shine against the Chiefs. I want to tip my hat, another tip of the hat, to Shaquille Leonard. I apologize. Shaquille Leonard for being a cheerleader throughout the whole game and keeping the crowd into it. It's one thing if a practice squad kid is doing, you know, going up and down the sidelines with a towel and firing up the crowd. When your defensive leader is not in the game is doing it like that. I'm just telling you, I noticed that. People caught on to it and said, hey, if our defensive captain's out there doing it, let's do it. But again, like I said, Kansas City scoring just 17 points on Sunday, tied for the third fewest points KC has scored in a game since 18. They've been held under 20 points only 7 times with Mahomes at quarterback in 2 of those times. That's right. The Colts. Colts held the Chiefs to 3-10 on third down. That's huge, Maytay. Give
me
something on that right there as far as winning this football game.
Yeah.
The defense shine, 3-10 on third down for a Patrick Mahomes.
And they were good
Andy
inside
Reed.
The red zone, too.
Yes.
So tremendous job of keeping Mahomes in the well, as they say, funneling him back into the pocket, even when he wanted to scramble out. The Colts did a great job with their pass rush, staying in their rush lanes on Sunday. I thought it was a great defensive plan by Gus Bradley, by Ron Miles in the back end. The coverage was sticky. Mahomes had to hang on to the ball for a long time. I think he held on to the ball for just over 3 seconds, which was the second longest time of any quarterback in the NFL last week. I know that's getting into the weeds of things, but he normally likes to get rid of the ball much quicker than he did against the Colts. And when he did try to get the ball out, he had to hitch, right, pump fake, bring it down, rescan, allowing the Colts pass rush to get even more time on him. I just thought Gus Bradley sort of recalibrated who he wanted to be on that given Sunday against Mahomes, because Mahomes and the Chiefs had good success against Gus Bradley's defense in the past, you know, with the Raiders and the Chargers and the AFC West.
Let's be honest.
The numbers
here.
Were high.
Let's be honest. He torched them.
Yeah, the
he
numbers were
the
high.
He torched the Gus Bradley defenses and other. We got a lot of tips of the hat to Gus Bradley for the defensive.
Right.
What they did against KC to come back like that. And like I said, it's not easy to sleep the night before a game facing Patrick Mahomes.
And Travis Kelce.
Good job, Gus Bradley.
I think the numbers were 17 touchdowns and 2 interceptions for Mahomes in his career when he faces a Gus Bradley defense. Obviously, that was flipped on its ear on Sunday. I thought DeForest Buckner was great. Kwity Paye continues to develop. You know, you saw Ngakoue get the first sack. And as you said, the only touchdowns came on short fields.
Yep.
So the Colts were great in the red zone. Obviously, terrific in the second half, just giving up 3 points past halftime. Plus, the rushing defense continues to be elite, giving up only 58 yards.
Let's go. What is it, 2 point something a rush now?
It's 2.6, which is number one.
Yeah.
I think for the season, the Colts are giving up just a little bit over 75 rushing yards per game, which I think is third. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire had 7 carries, 0 yards rushing, and he's their lead back. So very well done by the Colts defense. And, you know, you're trying to marry what you did on Sunday in the passing game and what you've done consistently stopping the run through 3 weeks.
We needed everything to fall into place, needed the cards dealt to us. Whatever cliche you want to do it at home against one of the best teams in the NFL, we needed it. Special teams, they mattered. They won the battle on Sunday decisively. The Chiefs, they muffed the punt. They missed an extra point. They missed a 34-yard field goal. They also misfired on a fake field goal attempt. Knock on wood for that one.
What are you doing, Andy
Reid, on that one? I mean, and it wasn't run that great, as well, you know, as far as what I'm trying to say. Takes me back to a couple of years under the Pagano regime when he was running a little bit of a fake. I mean, there was
the Chiefs had a guy. They had two guys in their team with the last name Mahomes and Kelsey. And on a 4th and 11, they put the ball in the hands of two guys named Gray and Townsend.
Right? Not the best dude. As Tom Moore says, give the ball to your superstars.
Think players,
always.
Baby. That's Think it. Players.
The Colts turned that muff pump into 7 points in the first quarter, needed it, down to punt inside the one. Hello, Kylan Granson.
Yeah.
They made their first field goal over 50 yards. Welcome, Chase McLaughlin.
Yep.
Sunday, another a reminder, Mate, special teams matter. And hats off to Bubba Ventrone getting this team turned around after having a little bit of rocky start and losing two of the three key members of the special team.
It was a massive day. Frank Reich talked about it on Colts Roundtable Live last night. He called it a massive day and a dominant day for special teams. And as you said, credit to Bubba Ventrone for the preparation and the organization going into that game. And it all started with the muff punt and the recovery, and the Colts, you know, scoring a couple of plays later after they got a first and goal situation, kind of set the tone for the day and the good start the Colts needed against a marquee team. And it just shows you, you've got to bring it every single day in all three phases in this league, because the Chiefs have a really good special teams coordinator in Dave Tobe, but they didn't play well on that given day. So it's not as if they're not prepared, they're not ready to play, they just didn't execute. So it's the NFL, it's such a cliche, but it's any given Sunday, you've got to execute. Miss field goal, miss PAT, Pacheco slipped on a kickoff return down to the 10-yard line, the fake field goal misfire. The Colts had no mistakes on their end on special teams. Good kickoff returns by Isaiah Rogers. Nyheim Hines had a 10-yard punt return. Two long field goals by McLaughlin. The Colts downing a punt at the 1-yard line.
Huge.
So just an awful day for the Chiefs. Great day for the Colts. It's a huge reason why the Colts won this game. So when we talk about in training camp, you know, the kicking battle or the punting battle in this case, who are you going to sign when Rigoberto Sanchez goes down? I'll just bring in some guy off the street. Or when you talk about who's going to make the roster towards the back end to play special teams, to be gunners and to be those core, you know, three-phase guys on special teams running down and covering punts and covering kickoffs. That's why we talk about those things, because they matter. And they certainly mattered in this game.
And they changed the game, the play of the game. I mean, obviously, we see what special teams does. Mate, you're on a pitch count or a word count, whatever you want to call it.
This is Twitter. I'm out. 140 characters are out.
I'm just saying, you got a game to call this Sunday, so we keep you on a pitch count. But before I let you go, bring in J.J. Stankovic and Lara Overton, and then we're going to bring you back to wrap this thing up, Mate, real quick. Tennessee coming in, been a rival for a lot of years. Colts not great success against them recently.
Right.
Derrick Henry, still Derrick Henry. Ryan Tannehill, no A.J. Brown. Give me a little quick preview of what we're going to expect come Sunday.
Well, defensively, they're not great so far, right? And they're not doing a good job of stopping the run. But offensively, they found their rhythm a little bit last week, held on there towards the end, had to stop a two-point conversion to hang on for their first win of the season, winning 24-22. But I think everybody in this locker room, you sort of have to go back 2 weeks before the Jacksonville game. Everybody knows what time it is. Everybody knows who's coming to town. You've got to stop Derrick Henry. They lost A.J. Brown in the offseason, which I think is huge for the Colts, because when you factor in how the last couple of games have gone for the Colts, it hasn't been Henry in the rushing attack. It's been Ryan Tannehill and Brown in the aerial attack that's kind of killed them. So the Colts have not won at Lucas Oil Stadium against the Titans in their last three tries. Three straight wins for Tennessee. As you said, they've won back-to-back AFC South championships. Mm-hmm. You know, going into the season, we thought that the chief rival for the Colts in the division would be the Titans. Maybe we kind of have to rethink that a little bit, considering they're off to a slow start. Jacksonville's off to a hot start. Jacksonville blanked the Colts 24-0. That being said, still, this is a monster game. It's going to go a long way in deciding who wins the AFC South.
One of the best in the business right there. Matt Taylor calling the game week in and week out, and he gets you fired up. Absolutely. Again, great job calling the KC Chiefs-Colts victory. That was good stuff, brother. You get the goosebumps going sometimes.
I appreciate you, man.
Now it's time for a little stock up, stock down, stock rising, stock dropping, whatever you want to call it. We're calling the stock market, and we're going to bring in Lara Overton and J.J. Stankovic. Guys, how are you?
We're great.
Doing good.
I don't mean to answer for Lara.
No,
I said we're great.
Yes, yes. No, please go right ahead.
Speaking on behalf of Lara Overton, we'll be JJ Stankovic. Guys, what a great one. I was just talking to Maytay about it earlier, and a great call by Maytay. I keep saying that because I've listened to the replays on radio and I got goosebumps, and the game has been over right then. So when that happens, I love it. And I know you guys were fired up too, because after three games, we're going to take a look at the stocks of a few position groups on the Colts and teams around the AFC South. Guys, we saw what happened on Sunday. Jelani Woods, Alec Pierce, stock rising for the young pass catchers. As I said, Woods, Pierce stepping up. They both recorded their first career catches against the Chiefs. Pierce with three grabs for 61. And Woods' first two catches in the NFL go for six each, including both of those touchdowns, the one on the winning drive. JJ, stock rising for the young pass catchers.
Here's why the stock is up for both of those guys. The last three plays of the game, Matt Ryan completes a pass to Alec Pierce where he trusts him. Matt Ryan let that ball go. This is on, I think, the 26-yard line. It was a 14-yard gain. Matt Ryan lets the ball go while he's looking at Alec Pierce's numbers, the back of his jersey. Trusts him to be in the timing of the route and get open within the timing of the route. That's something Matt Ryan talked about a lot in the preseason, getting on the same page with Alec Pierce. Alec did it on that play, 14-yard gain. The next play, Matt Ryan checks out of whatever they were in. He brings Jonathan Taylor into the backfield, and he says, I'm getting this ball to Alec. Now, it doesn't work. I don't know if the ball hit Alec in the hands or if the DB broke it up. Good play probably by Kansas City on that incomplete pass. The next play, you get man coverage, Jelani Woods on Juan Thornhill. That is a 7-inch difference between the Kansas City safety and the Colts tight end. Matt Ryan says, hey, young fella, you're in man coverage. I'm going to throw this ball to where only you can go get it. Jelani goes up and gets it, wins the game. Matt Ryan, a 14-year veteran in the NFL, puts his trust in two rookies on the final three plays of a game-winning drive. Stock up. I don't know how it could be anything else.
I tell you, Larry, you get to give me something on that drive because Matt Ryan, like he just said, it was great. The offensive line stepped up as well on that thing. So give me what you thought coming down the pipe when these guys said, hey, we're going to play with the clock a little bit. And don't forget, a huge unsportsmanlike penalty.
Oh, that was massive. And, you know, 43rd game-winning drive of Matt Ryan's career tied him for sixth most all times. But what stands out to me is we know he's Matty Ice. He brings that poise, that composure in those types of situations. That's what he was brought here to do. But I talked to Frank Reich about this on Monday about how much Matt not only harnesses that mentality, but that's infectious among the entire group to be like, we're going to ice this game, right? We're going to seal this victory right here. And to go to two different rookies in critical situations then, and talking to Jelani and Alec after the game, what I loved about it is Jelani said, you know what? We never got up. We never got down in this game. We stayed completely even. And that's hard to do as a rookie, especially for a rookie who catches his first pass in the NFL and it's a TD, right? You think he would just be riding from that and kind of living off of that. But no, Jelani completely reset the remainder of the game and continued to come up in the critical situation in the fourth quarter. Alec afterwards said, hey, you know, it was a good, you know, complete all three phases team victory, but we still have a long way to go. These guys were not overly celebrating what they'd accomplished. They were immediately looking at, we got to continue producing this way week in and week out, quarter in, quarter out, and not live off of getting one good grab, one good touchdown here or there.
Hey, can I throw one more stock up for a rookie?
Yes.
Rodney Thomas II.
Huge.
Stock way up. He played 35 coverage snaps against Kansas City, did not allow any big completions, any completions at all, really.
How many snaps did he play against the Texans in the opener?
None on defense.
How about that?
Yeah, and this guy, seventh
round
pick.
Against Mahomes two games later?
And it didn't count, but the pass breakup he had late in the second quarter, where he covers just acres of space to break up a pass to Justin Watson over the middle of the field, unbelievable play. The recognition, the athleticism, the twitchiness that he has. Colts might have found a guy in the seventh round this year.
That play happened right in front of me. It was incredibly impressive. And I asked Rodney McLeod about Rodney Thomas yesterday, and he said that all goes to Rodney Thomas's preparation. That's how he has been. He has been that way. He's prepared like a starter. He has immersed himself in this defense, and he showed no signs of nervousness or lack of preparation. And he said those months and those weeks that he has invested, that's why he was able to go into that game. This was Rodney McLeod saying this. That's why he went in completely unfazed, stepped into big shoes, Julian Blackman to fill in a critical game for the Indianapolis Colts.
It was awesome, and things were well needed. I'm going to get back to stocks on the stock market in a minute, but let's go over this. Missed if they muffed the punt, the Chiefs did. They missed the extra point. They missed a field goal. Also misfired on the field goal, the fake field goal that Maytay and I were talking about earlier. And then Chase McLaughlin. I mean, we needed everything to kind of fall into place, downing by Kylan Granson. And it was sweet victory because we needed this to happen during, you know, in regular running time. And it did. He missed it. We still have a chance. And then, you know, the 15-yard penalty, you know, we still have a chance. That's what made this one sweet, is they capitalized on the Chiefs' mistakes. And you don't see that usually out of Mahomes and Andy Reid, guys.
One of the things on special teams that's important to note as well, this is a group that in the month leading up to the season, yep, or you know, the weeks leading up to the season, and then after the first week of the season, brought in a new punter and a new kicker. When you talk about how pivotal Rigo Sanchez has been in situations for this team, you got Luke Rhodes, who's holding down for everybody. I mean, thank goodness he and Chase McLaughlin have had that previous rapport. But, man, it's a huge testament to Bubba Ventrone and Joe Hastings and what they've been able to do with that group in the last month.
And Tony Brown, new guy, led the Colts in
downtown
special teams tackles.
Downtown Tony Brown. Did you
Grant
see Tony?
Stewart also.
Can everyone please take a moment, go to the photo gallery, and admire Tony Brown's arrival outfit on Sunday. He slayed everyone. It was outstanding. That is a guy. He is so unique. He's so fantastic. I'm so entertained by him. He brings so much juice. I mean, the whole time running off the field, he just kept yelling, "For the shoe! For the shoe! For the shoe!"
He's all in. I love it.
He is.
Downtown
so
Tony
energy.
Brown. Okay, we're going back to the stock markets. I'm going to say this lightly, because if you want to buy stock, do it in the offensive line. That's the Colts' offensive line. The Chiefs sacked Matt Ryan 5 times, forcing 2 fumbles. They hit him 7 times overall. The Colts have allowed 10 sacks in the last 2 games. Not good. We know that. The last time they gave up 10 sacks in the 2-game period, weeks 12 and 13 in 2017. Last time they allowed at least 5 sacks in back-to-back games, we had to go all the way back to the 2016 season. Colts are ranking 30th in sacks allowed through 3 games, allowing 12 of them on the season. JJ, let me start with you. The final drive, they were there. They were there. They were there on the final drive. As far as I'm talking about Colts offensive line, mm-hmm, they gave Ryan the time that he needed. We saw Jonathan Taylor do what he did, but I'm saying we have to build off something, and I want to do that over that 16 to 20 play drive that happened by giving the man time and making the throws.
Yeah, and Frank Reich said this after the game, that the one-on-one blocking that the Colts offensive line had was pretty good, mm-hmm, you know, as a whole. Matt Pryor held up really well in pass protection. You know, Quentin Nelson, Braden Smith held up well when they were in one-on-one matchups. And the issues here are with communication. And this is why I am not ready to just, like, slam the panic button and be like, this offensive line stinks. It's not a talent issue. It is not a talent
issue. Well, it
issue.
Shouldn't be. It's the highest-paid offensive line in football.
Exactly.
Lara!
But let's just... You can separate it being a talent issue, which is not fixable, versus it being a communication issue, which is fixable. It needs to be fixed, but if it were a talent issue, I'd be sitting here being like, this offensive line can't get it done.
Right, right.
It is not a talent issue with the offensive line. End of story.
And we talk about offenses meshing and take some times meshing. This offensive line playing with 2 new members. Well, Matt Pryor was there a little bit last year, but you know what I'm saying. And a new quarterback. So maybe it does take that month or 5 games for these guys to get clicking. Let's go back to the stock market. Stock rising. Those Jacksonville Jaguars led by Trevor Lawrence. Oh, my God. I don't want to spend a lot of time on these guys right now. But that win, that shutout win against the Colts, springboarded them in what happened against this game that they came in. Are they for real?
I think that they are, because they have fantastic leadership in Doug Peterson, and he is building that into what is going to be a good franchise moving forward. One of the things I wonder about with Jacksonville, because they are so young, they are so new in terms of new system, new coaching, a lot of new pieces surrounding Trevor Lawrence, can they sustain what they've done through the first 3 weeks of the season? I'm very curious if this Jacksonville team looks the same and is able to continue playing at the level that they are, say, in weeks 10 through 14, right? Because that often what you have is teams that come out absolutely hot, charging out of the gates because they're pissed off about the way last season ended. Obviously, that was a mess. They were able to get themselves into a much better situation, add some key assets to that organization. They've bought in to the Doug Peterson system. So they came out with a ton to prove early in the season. They're charged fully by emotion, highly motivated, all of those things.
Well,
it's difficult to sustain that for 3, 4, 5 months into a critical period. I'm not saying they can't. I'm just saying it's difficult to do. You always have a few teams every year that come out of the gates very, very strong, but then aren't necessarily those teams that are going to be the same in November,
quick,
December.
JJ, 62-10 the last two games as far as outscoring the opponents against a very good Charger team that they did that as well. So you're right on the money, Larry. We got to watch out.
And Larry's 100% right about the league adjusting to what the Jaguars are doing. It is 3 weeks. It's a lot of newness, especially with their offense. The one reason why I think the Jaguars are going to stick around, their D-line has a bunch of butt kickers on it. I mean, Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker, they're getting great interior play from guys like Smoot, Robertson, Harris.
They'll be back. You know, I'm starting to get ticked off right now, guys, because we're putting these guys up on a pedestal. We'll have them come up here again. You know what I'm saying?
It's not too far off.
I just don't
not
like talking.
Too distant future.
No disrespect to the Jags, but you know what I'm saying. It's like, gosh darn it.
But I think you can make a case that the Jaguars' D line might be the strongest singular unit in the AFC South.
Oof, you heard it right there. We're going to see him in a few weeks. But coming up on tap, staying in the stock market, and it's a neutral stock right now. The Tennessee Titans, after three games, they're 1-2. They held on for their first victory last week in three over the Raiders. Tennessee has recorded six straight winning season. They won the AFC South 2 years in a row. Ugh.
Wait, how wild was this past weekend, though, when for all the talk about how ferocious the AFC West was going to be this season, and then the Colts, the Jags, and the Titans all get wins over AFC West opponents.
You're right.
And the Broncos won by a point because Jimmy Garoppolo pulled a Dan Orlovsky.
Right, and stepped out of the end zone. Hey, what about Derrick Henry coming in? Yet to break out in the running game, averaging just 64
Colts
yards
have been
a
good
game.
Against the run. Yeah. Colts have been good against the run
match.
So
best
far. You're going to have to continue
NFL
to be.
The run.
Yeah, yeah.
JJ?
The one thing, Derrick Henry's Derrick Henry. He's going to do some Derrick Henry
AJ
things.
No AJ Brown.
Right.
Is he?
He's going to do some Derrick Henry things, yes, certainly. But what concerns me more that the Colts have lacked success against is containing Ryan Tannehill. Mm-hmm. The ways he's beaten you in the most recent games that I can remember, it may take can keep me honest on this, but it's been when he rolls out, when he's on the boots. That's where you've had difficulty in containing their offense in the past game has really been on the, you know, elusiveness and a bit of that ability that Ryan Tannehill has. To me, that's a bit more of the concern than stopping the run, because I think you have a good formula for doing that. The bigger question is in containing Ryan.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it, because the Colts have proven that they can stop Derrick Henry. I know Derrick Henry, in week three last year, he went over 100 yards, but he averaged 4 yards per carry, 28 carries for 113 yards. That is not efficient running the ball. In week eight, that's when he suffered his injury, 28 carries for 68 yards, 2.43 yards per carry. This year, Derrick Henry is averaging 3.6 yards per carry, and his average has gone from 5.4 in 2020 when he was just an all-world player, 4.3 last year, 3.6 this year. Look, Derrick Henry is a great football player. No one is doubting that. You turn on the tape, you see it. But that offensive line that Tennessee has had over the years.
They just lost Taylor Lewan.
They just lost Taylor Lewan, and you know, Roger Saffold isn't there anymore. They've kind of chipped away at
a great Hoosier, Roger Saffold, by the way.
That's true.
Come on.
They've kind of chipped away at that group, you know, with some departures, with some injuries now. I think it might have a little bit more to do with the O-line than it does Derrick Henry.
Good.
But Lara's absolutely right. That boot game from Ryan Tannehill, I am sure you're going to hear about that from Rick Venturi and Intense Football with Rick Venturi on Wednesday.
No one loves to hit it harder than Rick Venturi right there.
Can't wait. Bring them on, boys. They're coming to Lucas Oil Stadium this Sunday at 1 p.m. But coming up right now, a couple days ago, we had a special guest that was in town doing something for the Irsay family and the Kicking the Stigma campaign. Kay Adams, the wonderful Kay Adams, is host of Up and Adams. She joined Larry Overton and Matt Taylor last week to discuss her thoughts on the Colts, her new show, and her involvement in Kicking the Stigma. And by the way, she called this win.
Joined now by the host of Up and Adams, Kay Adams. And we should preface this by saying she just got pied in the face by Blue, and she is such a trooper. She just immediately towels off, walks right into the studio, and she did it all for a fantastic cause to help raise money for Kicking the Stigma. You are the host of tonight's Beyond the Sidelines event.
Are you coming with me?
I will be there. I'll be up on stage.
Good.
Yes, we will have so much fun. You made your way all the way from LA to come to Indy to host this event. Do your show live live from our studio.
So fun.
So fun. Why was this, though, something that was such a priority, so important for you to do? Because I know you get tons of asks to do all sorts of different things, and you can't possibly accommodate them all. Why was this something that you wanted to do?
I think a couple of reasons, and thank you for having me, and thank you to the Indy Colts production staff for being so welcoming and letting us take over the studio to do our first remote show.
It is yours anytime.
Thank you. We have to get you on the show.
I would love to be.
It would be so fun.
Yes.
Yes. I think when someone's really passionate about something, it's very obvious. It's very clear. And that's something that's really important to Kaylin, who's always been wonderful and ready to reach out. And she's always wanted to come on Good Morning Football and talk about this and how important it is to her personally and how important she knows that it is in the community, especially in 2022, on the field and off the field. So you could just tell she's passionate about it. I always have throughout the years. And I also think it's really important. And in a post-pandemic world, you know, the pandemic got me to stop and sort of think more about what kind of person I want to be, the struggles that I have, and it slowed everything down in a really meaningful way for me. And so I think you have to really prioritize mental health, and it's something that I for a really long time didn't. And I think part of that is that there was nobody saying it's okay to, and there was nobody saying, "Are you good? Will you check in with yourself? Like, how are you?" And if you know, but nothing else, kicking the stigma, bringing awareness to. Am I good? Let me check in on somebody else and make sure they're good. And just making it okay to not be okay and to feel your feelings, I think, is a very simple idea, but one that needs reinforcing.
You are one of the most prominent, recognized faces, voices in NFL media. Every single day, you're having conversations with coaches, with players, with personalities across the league. How encouraged are you to see how much more open players are being and using their platforms? I mean, Shaquille Leonard here had tons of our players speak up across the league. I mean, you look at guys like Darren Waller and how inspiring his story is. And that's just one of Hayden Hurst. There are so many, many. How much more prominent have those conversations become? And how are we seeing people become more open?
They used to not be part of the docket at all. It wasn't a question you would ask. And then I think the first time I sort of started seeing it prominently was when we started doing the draft-a-thons for the NFL. When we were talking, it was during the pandemic. It was, let's raise some money. And a lot of the players that would come on and a lot of the personalities and celebrities, I would just basically host this two-day event where we're raising money. And it was a lot of people wanted to come on behalf of mental health. And that struck me, you know, to see players like formerly Darius Leonard, now Shaquille Leonard, talking at that point about what it meant to him. And then you get to a point where, you know, I think I had Brandon Marshall on my show a couple of weeks ago. And as I grew up a Chicago Bears fan. Brandon Marshall, in my worldview of what my experience was with NFL, he was the first person to sort of come out and openly talk about some of the struggles that he had and just the health of his mentals, right? And I thought he was a trailblazer in that way. And now he's not, because everyone, and not everyone, but many players have sort of stepped up and opened up to it in football and outside of football. Football, obviously, you know, we had Lane Johnson on earlier this week. He was really candid about his struggles and you know, sort of keeping himself on track over the years. That's a tough guy. And when I asked him about it, and I said, what kind of resources are you dipping into? He wasn't specific, but he did. The answer to that question I thought might be like maybe therapy. He did say he sets out a sports psychologist. And he was open about that on television, on mic, after a win. Like, that's what he wanted to talk about. And I thought that was wonderful. And then he mentioned that it's, the masculine factor of a locker room in the NFL, which makes it a little different than maybe other sports where you're seeing this be prevalent and a big, you know, paramount part of conversations. It, you know, he said it's hard. Guys have a hard time opening up. Guys are sometimes, you know, and he's generalizing, and he apologized for that. But he said, I want to fight against that. And I thought that was so huge. So all the work that you guys are doing with kicking the stigma is so important from that world. And I'm seeing it all the time now. It's not where it needs to be, though, and that's why I wanted to do this, because my first conversation with Kaylin was, do you think that, talk to me about the progress, because a lot of things in the NFL and a lot of different teams who have different things that they're doing. They do them and they throw some money and they raise some money and it's over. Right. But you can tell it's passionate for her and the work is not done and it's only barely begun, which is great.
Kate, let's talk about you if we can. You, the new show, right? All those years on Good Morning Football.
All those years, I mean, baby.
It was an institution. Like I
did my time.
I mean, we watch you on this screen every day in the morning, and then we watch reruns of old games. That's what we do in the middle of the day. But your new show, how is it going for you? What do you like most about it compared to Good Morning Football?
I love building. I like trying something new and sort of getting to mold what format becomes effective. I was always really interested in programming. I was always really interested in, you know, why back in the 90s did they put Friends before ER to go up against it? I really did. I nerded out over that. And at Mizzou, that was my project for my senior project to graduate. I was, I talked about programming and TV programming and why you counter program and asymmetrical programming and all of that. So it's always just like, how do you stack a rundown? How do you make a show what you want it to be and what people are receptive to? And it's changed so much over the years. And Good Morning Football was very much that. It was 3 hours of like, let's play and see what works and what sticks and things, you know, that didn't work and things that did. I can't tell you how many segments we did on that show for one time and one time only. And we'd roll out there and we'd be like, We're not doing that one again.
Not all home runs.
Yeah,
right?
But then you have the toe drag swag.
Yeah.
And that happens and it's like, oh.
We got something.
We got that. That's good. Or cool
angry
plays,
runs.
Bro. Angry runs, right? Those things sort of stick and happen. So I know that I love giving good information. I don't have the best information, but I like bringing it to people. I think that's really important to bring credibility. It's something that I've tried really hard to build over those 6 years and that I wanted to continue doing. And I was just ready for something new. And FanDuel, like most, you know, things are just changing. It's where it's going. They want content. I think right when I took the job, a lot of people were like, you're doing a gambling show? I'm not. I don't, you know, that's obviously something I'm curious about because it's where the game is going.
Right.
But something that I never got to do or be a part of with the NFL. So then it becomes, part of it. But FanDuel really just wants content. They want fans to have good content. And so I'm the first sacrificial lamb sort of in the door in that. But they're not done, of course. And they look at what they did with McAfee. It's hard to not want to partner up with a company that really wants you to throw stuff at the wall and do what you want to do for an hour a day.
And it is so natural because you've so long been a fantasy football expert. You've given those tips. So really, it is a natural marriage.
No, I'm not giving gambling tips, just so we're clear. I'm not telling anybody, but I'm more concerned with, I don't want you to lose your money. I want you to have a little fun, and I'm going to bring you people that are going to give you the best information to do that.
And with this opportunity that you have, I mean, not many people can solo host their own show. Mm-hmm. I think you're probably the only female who's doing a daily sports-centric NFL show that I can think of, holding it on your own. With this opportunity and this platform, it seems like, too, that opens you up to so many other opportunities as well to expand and do different things.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that really excite you about having all of the possibilities that you have in front of you because you have launched something from scratch?
So you know, we launched Good Morning Football from scratch, and that led me to a lot of opportunities working for People Magazine, working for, you know, working on Sundays on Game Day Morning for NFL Media. I love working for NFL Media. I miss being there on Sundays. So we're both sides are efforting what that could look like, managing the both. There's some, I'm not going to bore you with the ticky-tacky rules of the engagement between two. Yeah. So unfortunately, I had to pick one over the other for now. But I would love to, you know, obviously return in that capacity. I love interviewing players. It's my favorite thing to do. So anything in that world, I'd like. I moved out to L.A., which is insane. So that opens a door, too. Totally different world. I don't love it yet. So I'm very much a New Yorker or a Chicagoan. So I very much appreciate that more than that. You know, I'm impatient. So that'll be a whole set of challenges for me. Right now, there's obviously a lot of things I can't talk about yet, but I'm really focused on the show. And I know it's a solo show, but it's such a team effort and it's a small team. But you can speak to this with what you guys have built here in Indy. You're proud of it.
Absolutely.
And you built it from what it was to what it is now. And you guys are cranking out content and you're seeing progress. And there's nothing better than that feeling. But it's a team. I have, you know, I brought my producer. He's never been on the road with me. We've known each other for 2 weeks. We're like spending 12 hours together in the airport yesterday.
He took a pie.
Took a pie to the face. Conrad Company. Yes. And we just have a really a lean group of people who also took a risk, right? That's what it is. I took a risk. I left a really comfortable gig and decided what else is out there. But if I'm not taking a risk, what am I doing? I would just, you know, doing that job for four more years wasn't that. And with this one, you're knocking it out of the park because I can, FanDuel is so open to me doing other things.
Yeah.
But one of the things I challenge them with is they are the leader in the industry when it comes to sports betting. That means that we're winning. FanDuel is winning. And if you're winning, I think you have to pay it forward. I think you should be giving. And so part of, you know, also my attraction to coming to Indy is to hopefully open that door to other teams, to other people wanting to do good and helping me sort of serve that, because now I have time for it. FanDuel's open to it. FanDuel will be donating to this cause, of course, on behalf of me and my show. And that's sort of the way I want to go.
Yeah. One thing that you mentioned, of course, you're roots are in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
You've been pretty much New York for the past few years. Now you're LA, but your core is Midwest girl. Went to Mizzou, and you were always putting a focus on, you know, the Chiefs and the Bengals and the Colts. Like,
yes.
You do such a great job of giving love to those Midwest teams, those quote unquote smaller market teams. So the Colts have obviously not gotten out to the start that they would have liked with back to back divisional games on the road and then hosting the Chiefs, hosting the Titans upcoming. This is, of course, we're recording this in between or leading into the Chiefs game. We'll play it next week. But
those Colts Chiefs games are always epic.
Oh, my gosh. I know. I cannot wait. For you, though, looking at this Colts team, looking at the locker room that is there, the roster that's been assembled, Frank Reich, then the structure, the landscape of the AFC South. Why should Colts fans still be optimistic about what this team is capable of doing, despite the fact that they were a little discouraged by those first 2 weeks?
You're missing some pieces, right? So Shaquille Leonard will be huge. When I sat down and talked to DeForest Buckner, it sort of became clear, like, I know the characters in that locker room, but you don't think, unless you stop and think about it, there's so many leaders. There's so, between Leonard, between Buckner, who went and played in a Super Bowl, had a big time sack in that Super Bowl, like, and he's replaying that in his head. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes crazy on Mahomes this weekend. I really think he might, because he's got a little bit of a vendetta there. But there's such great leadership, and that's sort of what it takes. You look at how the Browns started the season, not well. They had a players only meeting, took some accountability, and turned things around. Things can always be turned around because you have talent to do it. You have Jonathan Taylor. You have a guy who had 18 rushing touchdowns last year. You have a guy like Q, another leader, hopefully, in that locker room. Frank Reich is a huge question mark, I think, in the national media. We love him. Can't get it done. What can you do? Because the talent's there. The culture seems to be there. Mm-hmm. So where are we failing in some of these games? But I do think that it can be turned around, especially in this division where we're seeing, you know, what the division is. I just say that. You know, Trevor Lawrence looks impressive, great. And Christian Kirk looks like that pay tag looks okay so far. I don't know if it's going to carry them into a playoff situation.
Good ROI so far.
Yeah, but you know what? I'll tell you the truth. When I was talking to DeForest, I asked him who the leaders were, and he's saying them, and I'm waiting. And I go, is he going to say Matt Ryan? And he did. And I don't think, and DeForest isn't, he's an earnest person. And so the fact that, you know, that's a Super Bowl, that's a league MVP. That is someone who also played in a Super Bowl, who has got so much experience. Like, I put it on Matt, turn it around. And so I'll talk to him about that tonight.
No doubt about that. Okay, the NFL is so popular because of the parity. Every year there's a team that goes from worst to first, and, you know, four or five teams that make the playoffs this year didn't last year, right, and vice versa. So you got a lot of good football teams from last year, including the Colts, that are off to slow starts here. The Colts, Titans, Raiders, Bengals, all of these teams, as we sit here and talk right now, going into week three, they're all winless through two games. Which of those teams have you been pretty disappointed by, and which teams do you like still going forward?
Bengals, I'm disappointed by, of course.
Yeah.
It's my team from last year, and it was a magic ride, and then they went and they addressed their offensive line when I think maybe they should have, and Chris Collinsworth disagrees with me about this, but I think that they should have just paid Teron Armstead, and they should have given him a lot of money and a lot of investment, but it would have been worth it because he's four not gelling right now, and you have a quarterback who is holding on to the ball a little long as well. Chris Collinsworth talked about his accountability, needing to get it out like Tom Brady does, knowing that he's the face of the franchise and he's everything. But that team is one where they need to kick it in gear, and I was really encouraged after the week one loss because they coughed up the ball five turnovers. They should lose that game by 30, and they almost won it up against the Steelers.
Right.
It's true, and you have Tomlin on the other side.
Right.
But then after the second game, it just they need to figure something out. I think they need to be a little bit more creative. Jamar Chase facing double coverage, I'm not going to say he's figured out, but there needs to be another option or a way to do that. Of course, with the other receivers, they have great receivers there. So I'm hoping they can turn it around. But it's tough in that Ravens team if they get healthier in the secondary, which I don't know if will happen. That'll be a tough sledding for them. But
all right, last one from me. You talked about DeForest Buckner, and you love interviewing players.
Yes.
We all do. Which Colts player, what other Colts players do you really enjoy spending time with?
I want Matt. I just wanted Matt. I asked for Matt Ryan. I want to sit down with him, but of course he's focused. And I like the answer. He's got to turn this team around. He's got, you know, that's what we're trying to do here with the Colts. Jonathan Taylor, I met him for the first time last year at Super Bowl. And
he just blow you away?
So beyond his years mature.
Right.
And he's so present when he's talking to you. And I think that he thinks about the game, but I also have a great appreciation for his awareness that it's not forever. And he wants to make an impact beyond what he can do on the field. Of course, he's focused on that now, but he has this, it's this new wave of players, especially at the running back position, that sort of see what it is. And I think he's got grand ideas of what his future might be. And he's thinking about that, which I always appreciate.
Kay, I know you got in super late last night from L.A. and you had
this
duties.
Morning.
Or yes, yes, it was.
I have
was
to go to Saks Fifth Avenue right now.
So
we gotta go.
She's got a party to get ready for. Yes. She has the Beyond the Sidelines event to host tonight. Cannot wait to see you there. So excited for tonight. Thank you so much
for taking
the time to sit down and hang out with us.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Great stuff, guys. Thank you, Kay Adams, for coming in. She did a heck of a job at the Kicking the Stigma campaign, raising almost $2 million that Thursday family hosting that event. Lara Overton and I were up on the mic, which brings me something really quick. I need to apologize, and I'll do that on air to Lara Overton, because we kind of said, they said, hey, have Gorman do the live auction part of this thing. And then Lara was there, and we're like, well, Lara would be great because she just ties everything together. Can she help out with the night of hosting duties along with Kay Adams and myself in the live auction? And I'm like, Lara, I'm going to bring you in and everything. She introduced me on stage. I go to the live auction. I ball hog the whole thing. I mean, I don't let her talk, guys.
Wait, no.
I swear. And so I need to apologize.
That's
I literally
never
said,
before.
Thank you, Lara. I'm taking the ball. I did not let the woman talk during the live auction. I'm sorry. I need
to
apologize.
Need to. You do not need to. You absolutely not. I was like, I'm like the quarterback. You were Jonathan Taylor.
No,
I was
no.
just
most,
feeding
most
you
of
the ball. A
couple
feeding
of the audience ball. Members said, what are you doing, bro?
No.
What are you doing?
She's
we,
right.
Yeah,
there.
We want Lara on here, not you.
Let me tell you guys, this guy was in freaking credible.
Oh,
he
was
driving up the price of these auction items, and then he's also just calling the audible and going to the owner, and Mr. Irsay's just throwing in more
he
and more
about
things.
12 feet in front of me, so I'm like, hey, boss, can we get some more things?
Can we sweeten the deal?
Play clock down to three. Jeffrey needs more money. Looks over the defense. Can I get a 50? Can I get a 100? $150. Takes the step.
Yeah.
Hands it off to Lara.
You know what it was? It was an airplane and a helicopter.
Yeah.
That's what he was throwing in.
It was awesome.
Well,
it was really fun. It was really fun. And then it was also really special to see you and the boss have a great conversation before his performance as well. It was wonderful. It was such a wonderful night to be a part of it. And what an incredible event.
And
testament to Kaylin.
Kaylin Jackson, let's give it to her.
$1.6 million raised for Kicking the Stigma for Mental Health
Over
initiatives.
One night in Carmel. It was great. I mean, just to show up, Mr. Irsay did his thing, sang a couple songs. So hats off to Kaylin Jackson. And she
one
put
thing
on a great
too,
event. And Ashley and Joe Fondaroli and everybody involved.
Oh, yeah.
And we do have the Kicking the Stigma game to look forward to coming up. That'll be the game against the Steelers. So a lot coming ahead to look forward to get involved with as well.
All right, let's go. We're bringing in Maytay, the Quotes Twitter mailbag. You guys are going to go around the horn. We're going to answer a question from Twitter on the game broadcast. It comes in today from Broad Ripple Darts at BR_darts. Okay, so he's juiced most nights throwing darts in Broad Ripple. That's what
probably
I'm getting.
Probably at the Broad Ripple Tavern, if I imagine.
Or is he like an expert who travels and wins tournaments? I want to find out who this cat is. I
mean, tweet back at us. We want to know.
Is he soaking beers, bellied up at the bar, throwing some darts, or is he really good?
Okay, bullseye.
Here he wants to know. Here, on the game broadcast, Tony Romo pointed out there seemed to be some communication issues between the quarterback and offensive line on blitz pickups because Matt Ryan isn't used to the offensive system yet. JJ, do you get any sense of that? From talking to the players, Matt, Lara?
I think you get a sense of that because you hear about communication a lot. You know, Ryan Kelly said after the game, there are communication things we have to clean up. I want to throw out some numbers, though, because I was surprised at this. This is, from Pro Football Focus, the lowest pressure percentage allowed when blitzed through week three. Number one, lowest pressure percentage allowed, the Miami Dolphins at 12.9%. Number two, the Philadelphia Eagles at 14.3%. Number three, You can see where this is going. The Indianapolis Colts at 15.4%. I think we are seeing some plays where you get a free rusher that are unacceptable, obviously. There are more plays out there where the Colts are picking up a blitz. They are neutralizing it. They are giving Matt Ryan enough time to get the ball out. And we are looking at Nick Bolton coming through the A-gap unblocked on 3rd and 6. We are looking at unblocked pressures from the edge and feeling like, man, this line's a disaster. I think, to go back to what I was saying earlier in the pod about how the line's winning their one-on-one matchups, there are some good things that this line is doing. There are some eye-opening misses that they are making, but those are communication things that they can clean up. I think we are seeing the Colts do some good things against the blitz. It's not all bad. There are things to build on. That's why I wanted to go with this
Lara,
question.
JJ's making chicken salad out of chicken caca
yeah.
over here.
Well, when I talked to Braden Smith last week, he said we have to be the more physical team in these matchups. So they are embracing that they're not playing where the standard has been set for them to play to. And that was one of the things that he noted. Physicality. That's where we got to be. That's where we really have to bring it. So, yeah, I think, you know, obviously Romo is going to see certain things from the quarterback perspective with communication. And it always takes a while. I mean, I go back to a conversation that I noted previously with Quentin when Quentin told me, yeah, it takes weeks 4, 5, and 6 are where you really, as an offensive line or a quarterback, establish where you are. And you also think about the wildly different quarterbacks that those guys up front have played with over the past 4 or 5 years, right? And just how different Matt is than what you had last year in Carson Wentz. So yeah. You have the pillars of your O-line in Quentin Nelson, Braden Smith, and Ryan Kelly, and then you have Matt Pryor and you have Danny Pinter stepping in. Danny Pinter primarily was backing up at guard. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, at center last year, and now moving to guard. So that, and then of course you had the rotation last year at left tackle where you had Eric Fisher out there. So they're going to be some things for them to work out. But I loved Brayden being like, we just have to be more physical.
I hope Bernard Raimann comes back into the mix. The depth, obviously, that he provides. I hope this thing, you know, a young rookie playing that position, though, Matt. I mean, we need all the help we can get.
Yeah, the Colts make no excuses on this, and there shouldn't be, because there is a new quarterback and there has been a revolving cast of characters at that position the last couple of years. There's no doubt about that. But there was a ton of time on task in the month of August in training camp. Really, you go back even further than that in the offseason workout program. You've got the pillars that have been here for a long time with Nelson and Kelly and Braden Smith. Whatever the problem, I don't pretend to be an offensive line savant. Whatever the problem is, you got to get it figured out, because Matt Ryan still got rid of the ball relatively quickly on Sunday, 2.5 seconds, and he's still being sacked 5 times. There's just no excuse for the amount of resources and the amount of talent on that offensive line, whether it's communication or individual breakdown, whatever it is, because I'm not breaking it down like someone like Chris Strausser.
Sure.
So whatever the problem is, you got to get it figured out, because the NFL is a leaky faucet, and until you fix the faucet, it's still going to leak and you're still going to see the same things. So 12 sacks and 28 quarterback hits on Matt Ryan through 3 games is not acceptable for this group. Frank Reich knows it. You got to get it fixed.
Yeah. I just think my point on this was, when the Colts miss, they miss bad, mm-hmm. but they're not missing as much as I think you might think.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's fair to say.
They're gonna
bounce back, boys.
We're going to figure it out, and we're going to figure out who's comfortable in what position, and they have to figure this thing out with Matt Ryan, especially,
right.
as Lara said, you know, they're loaded up front when it comes to salary cap space. A lot's been on the offensive line. They trust those guys, and Quentin Nelson, the latest guy to get paid on that offensive line, I honestly think these guys will turn it around and find that dominant fashion again. Again, it's going to take maybe weeks 4 or 5 to really start gelling. That goes for the offensive line well. So, hey, glass half full all the time with that O-line.
One thing really quickly, since we are in the, you know, Twitter mailbag portion of our show, Marcus, loyal listener Marcus, stopped me on Sunday. He was right up front cheering so loud. He was awesome. He stopped me to talk about the pod, so wanted to shout out to Marcus.
Way to go, Marcus.
So
Marcus.
Great to meet you.
Thanks
on Sunday.
Marcus.
And if you guys see me out and about, if you see any of us, be sure to stop and say hi. It's always great to get to meet you guys and chat and interact with you.
I ran into a nice fella in the parking lot. I didn't get his name. He had to run, but same kind of thing, Lair. He was saying that he saw the Colts win at home for the first time since like 2018. The last couple of home games he's been to, the Colts came up short. So glad to see a big win. He was appreciative of the podcast. So for that young man, I didn't get your name in the parking lot after the game on Sunday. Hello to you too,
and to the six Chiefs fans that were in row one heckling me while I was doing my in stadium announcements and stuff. I'm laughing at you now. I don't wish car trouble on the way home, like I said earlier to you guys. But we got the W, and you didn't. All right, Maytay's random thought
are
of
you
the
ready?
Week is coming up.
Are
no,
you ready?
No, I'm not ready. So hold on a second there. It's a random thought of the week. I have to brace myself for this one and get my thinking cap on. I want people to follow you at JJ Stankovic on Twitter, at Lara Overton on Twitter, and at Maytay Colts on Twitter. What on earth is your random thought
ready?
Of the week, Maytay?
Well, the game on Sunday will happen on October the 2nd, so the first game of the month of October. Fall is here. Are you guys happy fall is here,
are you sad that
summer is over?
I need to hear
She's
from Lara
flabbergasted.
First.
I'm not a fan of fall. Not a fan. Don't like it.
Colors? That's beautiful colors.
No.
Don't
like it.
Leaves,
nope.
Lara.
Don't like it. I don't decorate for fall. I hate pumpkins.
It's
like I don't need a bulbous gourd on my porch. Like,
Starbucks.
I don't like it.
Pumpkin
I don't like
spice.
I don't hay and the moms and all the things. No. I think fall colors are ugly. The orange and the brown and the yellow.
Oh
I just don't like
hay
it.
Hay and the moms.
Moms.
No, the mums.
The mums.
That's how you're like,
you can buy
I
a whole
jump
lot of
in
mums.
The leaf pile again, Bradley.
No. I don't like it. Don't like fall.
Do you need a nap,
you guys,
sir?
This morning, I went for my run. I meet a friend of mine several times a week. We go at 5:45. I had to put on a long sleeve shirt for the first time this season. I am not happy about it. I am not happy. In the power rankings of seasons, I go 1A summer, 1B spring, and then like 742 is fall,
and
743 is winter.
Okay, JJ, fall, it's here. What is, I mean, are you happy that it's here? Are you sad summer's over?
I like fall on Sundays,
yeah.
Saturdays and Sundays.
Okay.
I don't like fall Monday through Wednesday or
no.
Monday through Friday. Like this morning, I'm getting up. It's 40 degrees outside already.
Sure.
What's going on? I hate it. No, give me summer Monday through Friday, and then fall on the weekends.
Maytay, give me your thoughts, because this comes from
well,
you, so
I'm
I think
a,
you're happy
big,
about this.
Well, it just popped in my brain. But I have a battle with the leaves. I got a lot of trees.
Yeah,
you do have a lot of trees.
Oh, the leaves are just a killer.
I'm so happy you brought up that, because I'm in position right now, and I'm not trying to tap myself on the back. It's out of laziness alone that I pay a service to do the leaves.
Oh,
I don't blame you at all.
Yeah, I mean,
even
I don't
if I didn't
yeah.
have this
I mean,
job where I'm crazy
like,
busy in the fall, I'd
right.
still pay for the leaves to be
done. I mean, it's just like, get down. I'll cut grass. I'll shovel snow even. I'm like, leaf raking? Uh-uh. And when it comes to the kids jumping in leaf piles, remember this, Mom and Dad. They are covered in bugs when you bring them out of that pile. I mean covered in bugs. So when they bring them into the house and you're seeing stuff all around on the floor, it's because Bobby and Sue were jumping in the pile. I'm not being negative. I'm just saying, just hose them down before you bring them in the house.
Wait, right. Not to mention on top of that is the leaves hold a ton of moisture. So if you're someone who has seasonal
yep.
allergies, those things are a nightmare.
Nightmare.
Those
right
things
there.
Are disgusting,
yeah.
The amount of moisture that the leaves hold.
I do.
Well, I don't care about any of that, but they get in the gutters. They get on the roof. I mean, I'm just talking about a homeowner.
I will say the only thing that the one saving grace, Tugboat loves a little
oh,
fall.
Big
he loves
tug, yeah.
He loves to chase
he's
some leaves.
He's sweating. He's a big man.
I know.
You
he's
know
a
what
big
I mean.
Guy. He does. He fancies himself a little fall. So
we
we'll
got a
go
weight
to,
update on where is Tugboat
he's about 160.
Days.
He's trimmed down.
160.
So yeah. So insider knowledge here. Joe Hastings is a fellow Mastiff parent.
Really?
So he gave me a little insight on the food he feeds Moose. Moose is his
Moose
Mastiff.
And Tugboat.
So Tugboat's leaned out a little bit over the summer. Thanks for asking.
Good,
he's a good
I love
fighting
it.
Weight.
He lost weight to get down to 160.
That's
yeah.
a big dog.
That's incredible.
Man.
I love it.
That
That's
is
great.
A
my
big
dog weighs 15 pounds.
Okay, I'm going to just
like
wrap this thing up with this. I love for a couple of months of fall. I really do. I like seeing the colors. I like the Christmas in the air. I even drink an apple cider now and again. But when that December comes around, late November, and it's
You're
gray,
done. You're done.
And the first snow, is like, oh, I love it, look at it. And the next day, it's gray from all the exhaust and everything. I'm like, be done with it. Summer one, spring two, fall three, winter a distant fourth. I'm with you, Lara. Guys, I appreciate it. Thank you for letting me, you know, kind of steer this ship a little bit today, trying to do the best I can so I can shut up and let you guys talk, but it failed again.
Also, thank you for your apology.
Lara, again, another apology for hogging the mic on Friday night. At JJ Stankovic, at Lara Overton, at Maytay Colts, this is the Colts official podcast. We are brought to you by our friends at WinBet. Big game coming up. You can get more information at Colts.com. The latest and greatest, you'll hear from Maytay and JJ and Lair from the locker room, as well as everywhere else. Big one coming up against Tennessee, 1 p.m. kick. Let's go. Be loud, be proud. The streak starts Sunday.